Right, you guys to the one where she lived.
And then,
right now, it's...
I thought the only thing would have been better
was the one where she lived.
Well, you know, somebody just changed his letters.
Guess is there a move? Well, first thing, Councilwoman Kilpatrick's here, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Bell, Councilman Street, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Weiner, Councilwoman Diller, and Councilman Redden, and my Ruby Dillmore. And is there a motion to approve the minutes from July 17th?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those nay, ayes have it. The first thing on here is the Little Mill Creek flood control project, and Councilman Retta had something he wanted to say on it, so you want to introduce it or whatever?
Yeah, there's a couple people been in here that have been involved in this. I've been involved in it by living out in the area. For the past 8 years, I've been involved in it since I've been on council. But prior to that, I know the flooding has been going on in that area and above that for at least 24 years. And I know a lot of people up past the Kirkwood Highway near the VA hospital that were taking a lot of furniture, carpets and things out of their house because they got flooded. And since the conservation and the Army Corps and everybody that was involved in the upper part of the creek, we haven't had any problems up there since. They widened it, they made it deeper, and the people are real happy with it up on that half. The other half are the people that live, are in business, and some homes down below off of Maryland Avenue and then goes into Brookside Germain Drive, and we're having problems down there. And with this procedure that we're talking about today for the condemnation of the property of I believe it's 80 and 82, am I right, on Germain Drive, this is in question of for us to go in there and finish part of the work that has to be done to rectify the problem, as you can see on the picture up there. And some of that is, you know, what you're seeing there is Maryland Avenue, right at the bridge, and there's right up that building facing this, I believe, is Rita's Water Ice. And they, on the right-hand side where the traffic lights are, that's the park. The left-hand side of the picture is where Germain Drive and Brookside is, and that's where we're having a lot of problems. But also, they had some work done in the park, but it still backs up once we have a heavy rain and everything. And that's why we're here today. We're trying to rectify the problems. And to do that, we have to proceed with this. Turn over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Street.
Councilman Redder went straight to it, so I'm going to go straight to it. What's pictured there is a major problem. been a major problem for an extended period of time. My question is, can anybody tell me if what's proposed as part and parcel to proposed condemnation, to what extent is this going to be eliminated or eradicated?
Yes. Who wants to answer that? Wayne Merritt.
Wayne Merritt, Acting General Manager, Special Session. Thank you for my intro. Sorry, you covered everything I need to. Tony Schiavi has a series of photographs and some information which I think will directly answer Council's question as to remediation efforts that we need to result if you're, you know, continuing this project. At the conclusion of the funding presentation, Marion Dougherty and the law department will talk about the legal issues.
Okay. I want to just announce Councilman Penrose Hollins is present, and you want to just announce who you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tony Schiavi, and I'm an assistant county engineer in the Special Services Department. I'm assigned to the Environmental Operations Division. Before I get started, I just want to point out a few of the attendees here today. In addition to Wayne and Marianne, Kevin Donnelly of the Conservation District has come here to help support the project, and Brian Mulvena from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Philadelphia Planning Division, is here to help answer some of your questions as well. And as Wayne said, Councilman Moretta kind of summarized the project pretty good. You can see from this first slide that we're talking about phase two, and phase one was completed at the end of 2007, and phase one roughly was the channel from Hilton Marine to the Willsmere Yard. There's an area between phase one and phase two. It's mostly railroad property and parkland. So if you have some flooding in parkland, it's not that big of an issue. Phase two,
why don't I just say something? Council President Chris Bullock is present. Just want to make sure I don't forget something. Thank you.
And phase two starts at Maryland Avenue, culvert at Maryland Avenue, and ends at the Amtrak Railroad. And it's roughly 2,300 linear feet of channel. And this project is basically going to be widening certain parts of it to help minimize the impacts of rainfall events, major storms. The picture you see there, and again, Councilman Reddick gave you a perspective of where it is. You can see the Rita's Water Ice and the Dunkin' Donuts. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know how long that Rita's Water Ice has been there. It's probably been there for a while, but it hasn't been there. It's probably the newest thing there.
It's a gas station.
We believe this picture was taken either in 1999 or 2003, or possibly even more recent. But we don't have a date on this picture. This was provided by one of the residents that lived in the
January.
Just kind of going over the flooding history. This channel, this improvement project is not the first one for this channel. It was actually improved upon in the 70s and 80s when they developed the industrial park. Flood studies from the late 50s indicated that the meandering channel known as Little Mill Creek had to be straightened out and widened. And that work was done in conjunction with the development of that industrial park. And I believe the park was constructed sometime in the late 70s, early 80s, and there's still even more recent infill construction that occurred. The Corps of Engineers did a feasibility study for this flooding problem. And in that feasibility study, they listed a flooding history. And you can see the first storm from July 52, the one in August 67, 71, 78, and 89. Those are the only ones listed in their feasibility report, because their feasibility report was done in 1995. The rest of them I added on there just based on my memory. And you know, Hurricane Floyd, we all remember that one in September of 99. I had to repoint my chimney on that one. September 2003, Henri. And then in 2004, Gene. And Gene was the catalyst behind the $17 million flood mitigation program that was endorsed by council. And you all remember in August of 2011, Irene And then, of course, there was Sandy after that, but we didn't get hit hard at all in Sandy, in the road record. But you'll see on some of these storms, they list a 50-year flood, a 500-year flood, or a 100-year flood. It's a 100-year flood has a has a 1% chance of occurring in any given year. And a 10-year flood has a 10% chance of occurring in any given year. The 2-year a 50-year has a 2% chance, and a 2-year storm has a 50% chance. But to really say that a certain area is subjected to a 100-year storm, you got to have a rainfall of a certain intensity falling over the entire watershed, or have stream gauge data that backs up the flow amounts. So, in Gene, you may not have had really intense flooding in this area, but you had some pretty intense rainfalls, rain cells developing in the Pennsylvania area, and all that water collected in a ravine went right through Hokesson and then ended up in Glenville. And that's how Glenville got flooded. It wasn't necessarily a fact that a 100-year storm rained on Glenville. It's just a 100-year flood from somewhere else came and inundated. So you just got to be kind of tricky when you use those terms. But this is the flooding history. And it's funny how the definition of a 100-year storm has a 1% chance occurring every year, but it seems like every time we turn around, every 3 or 4 years, we're having a 100-year storm. So, but that just gives you a background of the flooding history. This project is authorized by Section 205 of the 1948 Flood Control Act, as amended. It gives the Corps the latitude to initiate small-scale flood control projects, provided they get financial support from local sponsors. And they don't need congressional approval to do these projects. And phase one of the Little Mill Flood Control Project and phase two fall in this category. And one of the stipulations is that the federal government takes up basically 65% of the cost, and the local sponsors, non-federal sponsors, take up the remaining 35%. So the project sponsors are the Army Corps of Engineers. They're going to assume most of the cost. Newcastle County, the state of Delaware, and the Newcastle Conservation District. And the estimated project cost contribution breakdowns is listed there as well. The Corps is going to contribute $3.4 million. The county's $575
million.
$575,000, I'm sorry.
So you can turn that light off right now.
I know we ain't got that left over from the $17 million by now.
We can buy some canoes, that's about it.
I was wondering how I could afford that Maserati and drive around. Yeah. But anyway, the $575,000, you'll see in your capital budget, it's more, last year's capital budget is $525,000, or to be exact, $523,000. There is a $50,000 allowance in the flood mitigation project, the $17 million project. One of the projects is designated for flooding problems on Brookside Drive, so we're lumping that money into this project. And if you look at this picture here, it was taken during Hurricane Gene. You can see, I'll get my pointer here, that's the head wall. And the Germain Industrial Park is over here, and Banny Park is over here. You can see, I'm sorry, I've got this mixed up.
West Park.
The other way. Yeah, Browntown is up here, and Banny Park is right here. And Germain Drive is right down here. And again,
Canby West.
And again, what's happening here is you've got large flows coming into that culvert. The culvert can't handle it. It's building up, going around the head wall, going across the roadway, causing all kinds of problems, and going down and flooding Brookside Drive and Germain Drive. The this was taken in 2004.
Is it?
And I think
I've got a question. When it's going over there, is that, you're not showing the other side, but is it backing up or is it falling off?
On the other side?
Yeah.
Well, this picture was taken 9 years ago by somebody else. And
I mean, the other picture was showing it backing up, you know, from there and then coming up. The picture you showed first.
Yes.
I mean, you didn't see where the ravine is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it.
It's got to be.
You know, it's a little different. If your pipe's too small, you end up having a waterfall.
And I think.
It's the opposite side of the street.
Yeah.
The camera was not level here, so there's a little bit of a distortion. It looks like everything's sloping that way, but I think it's
back, backing up is what I'm trying to get. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I've got a cleaner copy of this, and I'm going to pass this out. I'm also going to pass out some flood pictures. Over the years, I put some approximate dates on there that you might want to talk to me on what it is.
Just pass. Just pass.
Oh,
yeah.
Just pass.
Yeah, you can just pass them around.
No, this is the same.
Just send them around.
89.
Okay, if you look at your overhead view, your airplane view, this gives you a kind of an overview of the project. You can see Maryland Avenue here on one side, and the Amtrak Railroad there. This green line here, or it might be a blue line on your plan, is the current width of the channel. And what we're proposing to do is, towards Maryland Avenue, widening this bottleneck here. That'll help a lot of the water that backs up in Banning Park and on Germany Drive to get down here more efficiently. And when you send the water down there, what we're doing here, you can see the red part is the widening line. When you get here, we're widening both sides of it. And what we're trying to do is to get storage. And the storage helps counteract the large flows that are coming down. So this gives you a little perspective.
I think I asked last time, what are your falls?
No relation.
Going down through there?
Falls? Well, if you follow this, we're pretty flat where we're widening it.
I understand, but from that point up where you're doing, what is the drop?
Right here?
From there to Maryland? Yeah, up in there. I mean, do you have them?
I would guess. I'm pretty certain.
Kevin knows I look at a lot of faults.
Yeah. I think it's pretty safe to say it's not more than 2%. Yeah. It might be 1%.
I guess what I'm asking is really what the elevation is. Just so I have an idea.
Yeah, Mr. Councilman, we can get you those numbers, but
I think a few months ago I asked it too. So.
Yeah, I apologize, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You weren't here, but you know,
we can send you.
If you got a bottleneck and how much of a grade you have there. I mean, Kevin knows we do a lot of tag stitches that we do so much fall per 100 feet. So
we can give you a profile of the invert of the stream, and we can give you cross sections. I can email that to you.
Councilman Weiner.
Thanks. Is it appropriate now for me to ask some questions of legal counsel?
Well, I just asked because we were looking at that picture.
Sure.
Let's get to that.
Not a problem.
If that's not a problem.
Okay, not a problem.
If you got something like that, I'd rather at least have it said now.
Sure.
Councilman Street.
Can you show me here the actual site of the property that the department is asking us to condemn?
Yes. If you look at, if you look on your plan, you'll see a yellow shading there. There's an entrance, railroad there, the streets. Two parts of them are labeled there with these addresses. Those are the two properties, but the area that we're going to condemn is much smaller. And we have a map here as we go in the presentation to show that a little bit more clearly. Killer. But it's the two properties that are highlighted in yellow. What are we specifically doing on the flood control improvements? We're going to be installing 3,200 cubic yards of riprap. That's big stone. It stabilizes the embankments. And 100 cubic yards of fill material to stabilize the channel banks. But the key is 1,100 cubic yards of fill. The key is we're removing 30,000 cubic feet of material for a net removal of 26,000 cubic yards. Whenever you do work in the floodplain area, this whole area is in the floodplain. If you don't take things out, you're not solving any flooding problems. If you're adding things to it, you're making it worse. It's kind of like, think of a floodplain as a pub. And you drop a brick on that puddle, it's going to expand. More areas are going to flood, get wet. That's exactly what happens. So, specifically, we're eliminating a channel bottleneck upstream by widening 50 linear feet of the channel's right bank that's looking downstream. And we're creating more floodwater storage in the tidal sections downstream by deepening and widening 1,700 linear feet of channel. Both banks. That picture there, you're looking at Brookside Drive right here. This is Germag. Wilmington's down that way. Little Mill's right here. The water is building up behind the culvert in Canby Park West. And it's cascading over Germag Drive and it's shooting down Brookside. It looks like it's flowing uphill, but that's just because of the angle of the camera. As that picture there, we believe, was taken during either Hurricane Floyd in 99 or Henri in 2003.
Right.
Now, whenever you do a project, the question becomes, is it worthwhile? What benefits do you get? And engineers use some tools to help them determine that. And the main tool that they use is what they call an H&H model. In plain English, it's called a flood study. But an H&H model stands for hydrologic and hydraulic study. And what they do is they take cross sections of the stream. And they look at the area, they look at the ground cover that covers the area, they look at the boundaries of all the area that flows to a certain point, they look at stream gauge data, and they determine, they compare how flows, what the water surface level in a particular channel, what would they be in the pre-construction mode as compared to after they construct and widen these channels and improve, make their improvements. They use mathematical models and computer programs and principles and practices of professional engineering to come up with their results. And what they found was that for the two-year storm, the results are negligible at the midpoint of the project, which basically says that the bottleneck that we're trying to fix that can handle the two-year storm. And the Amtrak culvert down at the other end, which kind of can restrict the flow during heavy storms, that can handle it as well. So you don't really see a benefit on the small two-year storm. But the 10-year storm, and that's the storm that has a probability of occurring, a 10% probability of occurring in any given year, you're going to see a big benefit. You're going to see a 3-foot drop in the flood levels. I'm sorry, you're right, 4-foot drop, 3.7 feet to be exact. And that basically means that you can expect during a 10-year storm the water being 3.7 feet lower than what it is now. And for the 100-year storm, there's a 1.2 foot drop, which isn't bad. Because in a 100-year storm, that Amtrak culvert kind of limits the ability of that channel to drain. So those are the benefits of the project. A drop in flood levels. And if you look at this picture, if you believe it was from Henri or Floyd,
that's what I was running.
This is at the top of Brookside Drive. You can see the Dunkin' Donuts in the background. This is Brookside Drive right here. This water is coming from the opposite side of the culvert, overflowing Germain Drive, shooting right down Brookside. Land acquisition requirements. The last time I was here, we told you that we knew of at least one property owner that we couldn't successfully obtain an easement from, and there was possibly some more. We have been successful with the other property owners. So of the 47 properties that are involved, those 47 properties are owned by 39 people. 38 of the property owners have provided us with easements. The picture that you see there is from 89. It's at the top of Brookside Drive, looking towards Browntown. You can see that car there is just about submerged, trying to make a turn. What they need is that stuff that you spray on the bottom where that commercial is, where the guy drives a truck. That's what I think they need there.
Bill, could I ask a question, please?
Yeah.
Hey, if you go back to your next, thanks. If you go back to your last slide, Tony,
yes.
Okay, and you go to the next one, 3.7, keeping that, you know, that car still, is that car still going to be under, are we going to go from the roof down to where the engine is, or, you know, to the very top of the tires? I mean, my question is does this nothing fixes everything 100%. I get that with the flood. My question is how much are we really helping that car right there or that area?
Yeah, that's a good question. Here's what we're doing that I think helps that car out. On the other side of that building, on the other side of the auto body building there, that's where the stream is.
Mm-hmm.
Back down a little bit, we're taking a bottleneck and we're making it wider. So this flood water here came from Canby Park West. That has a better chance of getting in the culvert and moving out. And a lot of the water on Brookside Drive can't drain through the catch basins on Brookside Drive, because those catch basins are trying to drain into a channel that's deep. But with a shallower channel, they can drain a lot more. So to answer your question, how much is it going to help that car? I really can't tell you, but that car is not going to be that deep.
That's understood. Shallower, you mean, because it'll be wider.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. That's what you mean.
Right. It's shallower.
It's shallow. The same amount of volume is going in, but we're spreading it out.
Right. When I say shallower, I'll go back to the other.
That's the only reason I just want to make sure.
Yeah, the other side, we're going to be 3.7 feet shallow.
I understand what you're saying. I had the same question when I saw that.
And that brings us to resolution 12-122, which will be on your plate.
Councilman Street has a question.
Well, I don't know if you want to take it out. I have some comments. I want to wait until he's done.
Calls for the condemnation of certain tracts of land from one property owner. And before I go to the next slide, this picture was taken in 1989. Not 1975. It's not the U.S. Embassy in Saigon getting evacuated. You can see the chopper there and the people waiting. This is 1989. Probably can see that. These are people here waiting to get rescued by that helicopter. And that's, this picture was taken in 1989. You can see how high it is. That's the same car. These are specifics. You have number 80 Germain Drive and 82 Germain Drive. We're permanently taking 6/100ths of an acre. And we're temporarily taking about a quarter of an acre. Key word there is temporary. The time interval on this particular easement is 3 years. After 3 years, the easement goes away. Everything goes back to where it was. This picture, again, was taken in 89, and you can see how high the water levels are up. Back here, I think, is where the county pump station is. But this is Brookside Drive, a little bit further down. And I believe this is one of the pictures that we're passing around to. The land that we're asking for is required to construct and maintain the improved channel. And even though the temporary easements for these parcels will expire in 3 years, but the period of active construction is expected to be less than 12 months. That's if everything goes okay.
It's not further down. That's the second property you own.
This is the second property.
Yeah, because Austin improved.
That's right. That's right. You can notice the pickup truck there. It's
where the other car was.
Right.
Good thing it's not the truck involved.
And this slide here gives you a little bit more, gives you a better perspective on just how much we're taking. Originally, when we talked to you in August, we wanted easements on all three parcels. We took a good hard look and took a look at what we could possibly eliminate, and it was decided that we didn't need an easement on this last parcel here. But we still need these two, the temporary to work and the permanent to widen the channel. And keep in mind, these two are about a quarter of an acre. This is 6/100ths of an acre. These three properties combined are 2 acres. So we're taking about 3% of the land area. They're all owned by the same individual. And pretty much the benefit in this area is the 10-year storm is getting dropped a little bit more than 3.8 feet, actually. So there's this area is going to drain better once we get done. That's pretty much all I have.
Okay, I got a whole list.
Hi.
Yeah, I guess.
Hi, Marianne Dockery, Special Services. I'd just like to briefly state a couple points. We first came here in August to discuss the need to acquire easements on Mr. Pelican's property, the 80, 82, and 84 Germain Drive. After that meeting, we tabled the resolution so that we could continue our negotiations with Mr. Pelican and any other property owners that we hadn't reached agreements with. So as of today's date, we have reached an agreement with the other property owners, and so we just have Mr. Pelican's two parcels. They are located in the floodplain. We purchased them in 2008, and they have wetlands on them. So that's really the heart of the issue. We've offered Mr. Pelican fair compensation for these easement areas per the Real Property Acquisition Act, but Mr. Pelican has made it clear that he's not interested in monetary compensation. He would like the county to get him floodplain and wetlands permits so that he can build on his property. After the last committee meeting, we had several meetings with Mr. Pelican and his attorney, two to be precise, where we had Mr. Pelican, air his concerns with all the regulatory agencies that were, involved, the Army Corps, conservation district land use. I've given his attorney, Mr. Abbott, anything, you know, in the way of documentation that he's requested. At our last meeting, Mr. Pellicone brought in some conceptual plans for what he wanted to do with his parcel. Unfortunately, they still require him to get, you know, wetlands and floodplain permits, and special services just can't give him those, and he doesn't seem to understand that. We have no control over regulatory agencies, and you have to go through the proper process for that. So Tony's explained that we're not seeking to condemn his whole property, the two properties. There's only two temporary construction easements, which will extinguish at the end of the project, and then one permanent construction, or one permanent drainage and channel improvement easement. And I just briefly like to touch on some of the points that Mr. Abbott made in his letter to you yesterday regarding legal authority. Under 9 Delaware Code 1525, council is authorized to condemn for these easements. They're authorized to, in order to obtain easements to widen, straighten, or alter the course of any creek or run in the county, including Little Mill. And Mr. Abbott is creative with his wording, you know, twisting the wording about altering the course of. Altering the course is not defined in the statute. So when it's not defined, you have to look at the dictionary definition, the plain meaning of the word altering. Alter is to change. And if you look at course, what does the word course mean? Course is a channel in which water flows. So we are, by deepening this this channel, we are most certainly altering, you know, altering it as per the statute contemplated. We're not doing anything else that we're not authorized to do. And Mr. Abbott also makes a claim that the county is somehow acting as a Trojan horse, and that we have no authority. The council never approved this project, which is not true. This project has been approved in capital budget as Little Mill Control flood control project, rather, for years, at least going back to 2004. That's when Tony first started with the county, and probably a lot longer before that. I just haven't checked on that. And then lastly, I'd like to say, if we don't get these easements, this project, it won't go forward, and the federal funding most likely will be pulled from it and allocated elsewhere. So I just wanted to make those points. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I'd just like to add one thing, and thanks, Mary, for reminding me. I just want to point out on this slide, this whole area is in the floodplain. This solid line here is the floodway limit. That's the part of the floodplain that carries the 100-year storm. It has a velocity to it. Buildings are not allowed in this area. And this green line here, this boundary, this is the federal and state wetland limit. You need permits to develop that. So the permitting process for this property is pretty intensive.
Okay. Yep, thank you. We've got a whole list. I guess Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Marion, you anticipated two of my questions.
Thank you. Councilman Tack is here.
Counsel for the applicant refers to the fact that there are other agencies for which we're acting as a Trojan horse. It doesn't really specify what they are. I assume that these are the federal agencies and the state itself. Is that your understanding?
Marianne Doherty, Special Services. Yes, I think he's referring to the Army Corps, who's doing the construction and paying for 65% of the project, and the state and the conservation district. The county's a local sponsor, and our monetary contribution is obtaining the easement for the project. So.
And then he... the counsel for the applicant also indicates that the specific federal codes don't provide the authority for eminent domain, but isn't it correct that the eminent domain authority is a local land use regulatory authority? Thus, the fact that it's in the land use regulatory code is sufficient authority.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, I think we're, you know, on very strong legal grounds based on 9 Delaware Code 1525, which allows us to institute condemnation for a project just as, such as the Little Mill Flood Control Project. I can't even, you know, imagine where, you know, that wouldn't have been, there would be a better project, as an example, to go under that authority.
And I know eminent domain has, on a national level, been questioned. When I served as land use chair for the National Association of Counties, even the most narrowest definition of appropriate use of eminent domain by local government would have been covered by this this use. And I could concur, Counselor, that this is an appropriate use for the health, welfare, and benefit of the community. Thank you.
Okay, Councilman Street.
Can we go back to this shot?
Yeah.
All right. My concern is, on this end of it, on Maryland Avenue, and, you know, you've talked in a lot of technical terms, but at the end of the day, what you call a 10-year storm, it's going to reduce the flooding on Maryland Avenue or wherever by 3.7 feet. I'm just not so sure that what's to the left there is going to do that. And what I don't understand is why DelDOT is not at the table and part of this discussion. Because you guys can use all the technical terms you want. At the end of the day, when you look at Maryland Avenue, where the water is, hill comes this way, hill comes this way.
Right.
And on top of that, in recent years, DelDOT has expanded roads at the top of the hill to the south, which has not helped. So I don't see, I quite frankly think we're getting ready, all the parties together getting ready to throw away $5 million because, as I said facetiously, when it clouds, Mount Avenue floods. In regard to the property, it just appears to me from the picture that compared to the other land that's being dealt with, what's in red on this property is small compared to the rest of it, and I just don't understand why that of the smallest amount is going to make or break this project, and or why it can't be that amount of whatever you're going to do be done on the other properties as opposed to these properties at the end of the line with the smallest portions is the driving force. It may make technical sense to you, but it doesn't make common sense to me.
Yeah, and let me just, I think I might have misled you. The benefit where it drops 4 feet for the 10-year storm, that's mostly that's in the mid area, and even at the end. But there's no benefit up here. What happens up here, what this is designed to do, is to help that culvert drain better. So the 4 foot drop doesn't apply to up there as much. But the culvert will drain a little bit better. I don't think it's going to completely solve that problem. We think it's going
okay.
to
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. Based on what you're saying, we're getting ready to spend $5 million. Council for the property owner is threatening litigation, so we may have to defend that. We're going to do all this, and at the end of the day, Maryland Avenue is still going to be flooded.
No, it's going to be improved.
4 foot might save them.
It's going to be improved. It's the culvert underneath Maryland Avenue is going to be able to drain a lot better because we're getting rid of a bottleneck just downstream. I don't have any data on flood level drops there.
With the picture of the car and just knowing there, that and then just jump back, that there, and then go back to your, is right here,
right
off the road. So that car is down in a low spot. It's probably 4 foot. I don't know what the road bed is, but it's probably up high enough. It still goes back to what Councilman Sheldon said, is it enough?
But if you have a flow constriction here, it will cause water to back up and overflow Maryland Avenue at that point. But by widening here, we're allowing that water to move a lot more efficiently and keep the flood levels down. So it will help.
But that, am I correct? Not only Maryland Avenue itself, but Canby Park going all the way through the woods, that floods and all the way to where the waterway goes in back of the apartments next to the railroad tracks, all that floods back there.
Right, and the culvert here at Maryland Avenue could be a control section for that upstream area. But I don't know if this is going to help properties upstream. I don't know the extent that it's going to help the properties upstream. All I know is that flood levels here are going to be lowered, and in the vicinity of Maryland Avenue, that whole area is going to drop.
Councilor Cartier?
Yes, thank you. First, for disclosure's sake, I am Mr. Pellicone's district councilman, and I'm very sorry that he's not here today with his council.
Sure.
I've read the letter from Mr. Abbott, and just a few issues that I am concerned about. Number one, when we went out of here back in August, I went out of here as his councilman feeling like that there was a potential for the parties concerned to reach a amicable settlement about this issue. And I'm reading the letter from Mr. Abbott, and there was a little narrative timeline, and apparently they met November 8th. So August to November, there was a meeting finally in November. Then apparently the next meeting is, you know, where a hand-delivered letter comes January 7th, and, you know, we're going to be considering this condemnation. I was hoping that, you know, some kind of amicable settlement could be reached, and I just want to understand why we couldn't, you know, reach a settlement with Mr. Pellicone. I mean, he is a small property owner with three undeveloped properties here, and I just want to understand, you know, was a good faith effort made? Because in letter from his counsel claims that it wasn't a good faith effort. So that's my first question.
Yes.
Hi, Mary Ann Doherty, Special Services. We did meet with Mr. Pellicone in good faith. Special Services arranged for two meetings. The first one, I think, was, I'll have to check the exact date, was in September, but I'll check the exact date for you. We had Kevin, I believe, was there, and we did not have the Army Corps there at the time because Mr. Pellicone had an existing wetlands violation on his property where he filled in the wetlands. So until he corrected that, the Army Corps wasn't going to come out, you know, and engage in negotiations with him. So we had that meeting, and then we had another meeting where he brought in. So we had to wait till that was done. So that was part of the holdup, and that was on Mr. Pellicone's part. So we had to wait until he was concluded that until we scheduled the second meeting, which was in November. So we did meet with him, and he brought in his plans. And yes, we would like to, you know, work with Mr. Pellicone, but I can only do so much. I mean, I can't exert, you know, any kind of influence over the process with the other regulatory bodies. I mean, everybody has, there's a objective criteria for getting permits in the floodplain, in the wetlands. He bought, unfortunately, these properties subject to that, so there's only so much he can do. You know, under the law, we're required to offer him fair market value for these easements, and we've done that. You know, I'm happy and I've told his counsel to try to work with him and meet after this process to assist him in, you know, and coordinating things with the agencies to try to maybe, you know, smooth communication. But I can't give him permits. It's just not within, you know, my authority. So that's why we've reached an impasse here.
Okay.
I just...
And then, of course, you know, in the course of his, in the content of the letter from Mr. Abbott on behalf of Mr. Pellicone, there is a challenge to our authority to, in fact, do this. Now, Councilman Weiner has opined that, you know, he feels it is within our authority to do so, and the department is holding forth that it is within our authority to do so, even though we haven't really, we're just being given a cursory description of the project, and I guess... a pretty thorough description of the project, and I'm not questioning that flood relief is needed here. I fully understand that. And I feel that it's very unfortunate, but I'm going to continue to do further research with our council on this issue. And I guess this will be on the agenda for next Tuesday's council meeting, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Councilman Smiling.
I think only two questions. One, we're looking at a 3-year temporary easement, construction of approximately 12 months. If construction is completed and the necessary parties are comfortable with what's there, can the easement be lifted prior to the 3 years?
Yes,
temporary easement. For the temporary, could we move to do that?
Sure. I mean,
if we felt comfortable that it was no longer needed to go back in to fix something or whatever.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem. We could extinguish them, you know. We could even put that in the easement agreement itself.
So 3 years is a maximum, but if the work gets done, we're comfortable it's done right, and we don't need to get back in there for maintenance or to, you know, for a punch list, for lack of a better word, then we could release the easement earlier.
Yeah, for the temporary construction. Okay.
Number one question. Number two question. The plans that were submitted for development, does what we're doing enhance any of the requirements that Mr. Petticone would have to go through to develop those plans if this was not here at all?
If you're asking if if this project is going to make it harder for Mr. Petticone to get his, you know, plans through the regulatory bodies, I would have to say no.
It hasn't changed the process.
Not to my knowledge. He's still going to be in the floodplain, still have wetlands issues.
I understand. We're not going to waive wetlands requirements, stormwater requirements. We're not waiving any of that. There's a process that goes through, and all I'm saying is the plans that he submitted and was told, here's the process you have to go through. This has not created another hurdle to jump. Those hurdles were there. That's the process that would be in place. If we weren't sitting here today and he wanted to develop that property according to those plans, he would have to follow the same thing.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Just to follow up on Councilman Smiley's question, will this decrease his floodplain? Will it change the numbers at all? If you're decreasing the amount of flow, does he possibly have less of his property in the floodplain, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, Tony Schiavi, Special Services. If you're lowering the 100-year flood, which I believe in the vicinity of his property is by 0.5 foot, you're basically helping the property drain a little bit better. You might be reducing the 100-year floodplain area somewhat. But I think his property is, the 100-year floodplain extends beyond his property boundaries by a considerable portion. So even though it might be reduced a little bit,
that's a difficult, but
I think it's going to help in that the elevation of any structures that he plans on building don't have to be as high up.
Okay.
So he's kind of helped that way. And I think it increases the utility of the property because it's going to drain better.
Okay. And then if I'm remembering this, you know, way back in my other life, I mean, I remember at some point sitting in the task force with Secretary Hughes at the time that he talked about the second phase of Little Mill would now be taken over locally, you know, by the state, conservation district, the county, as opposed to waiting another 20-some years for the federal people to come up and allocate the full amount of money to this second phase. And I think that the last time you were here, one of my main concerns was that there was not, you had not worked with all of the property owners and gotten trespass agreements from them. Therefore, I didn't believe that asking for condemnation rights on one person's property was right, that you needed to make sure, you know, come in with all of it for us, not piecemeal. And I believe at this point that obviously if there's 38.9 property owners and you've gotten agreements for 38, that you've done that. So that's fulfilled what one of my major concerns was. If you would not be able to get, if this would not pass and you would not be able to get this relatively small agreement, would the project have to halt, or could it go on without this property being involved? Since it looks to me, it may not exactly, but kind of at the end of the run.
Right. Tony Scali, Special Services, to address that question, without that small piece, if we can't get that, it would require us to do a redesign and a reanalysis, require the Army Corps of Engineers to do that. They're not prepared to do it. I believe it would eliminate the project.
Okay, so this is really still the Corps' project.
It's their project.
They have allowed this to be moved over to local jurisdiction for construction purposes.
Yeah, it's their project.
Still their project.
Okay.
Our role is to be a non-federal sponsor
of the
conservation district. And we have a role in the project too, and one of our roles is to provide the real estate. And that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Redda.
Thank you. I believe Councilman Street asked about, said that the apartments would get flooded out. Are you talking about the old Spanish House apartments? Actually, the stream doesn't run as close to them as it does the homes in Silverbrook Creek, which comes down through Rosemont and then meanders down through Canby West. We're having a problem with that, as Tony Schiavi and Kevin Donlin knows, of Silverbrook Creek, because what happens when we do have a big flood or a big rain, Little Mill backs up and Silverbrook can't go down, and it just keeps backing up. And that's one of the reasons why Canby West gets flooded out and some of the homes in Rosemont. But not as bad as it would downstream, as in the areas where the businesses are. So you have two streams coming together. One's bigger than the other one, and the one's bigger one is bottling up the little one. And it's actually going to take a road out.
Councilman Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. How long has Mr. Pellicone owned those properties?
Marion Doherty Special Services, since 2008.
Since 2008. And up until this particular remediation project was proposed, had Mr. Pellicone submitted any development plan for that property?
I'm not sure if he actually submitted a real plan, or he just had conceptual plans that he had brought to land use. But at some point he realized that he couldn't move forward with his plans because he needed permits, floodplain and wetlands permits. So I'm not sure how finalized his plans were. The ones we saw were conceptual that he brought in at our meeting.
So he was advised at that time that these provisions would have to be met?
At some point after he acquired the property, it's been represented to me that he realized when he went in to see what he could do with these parcels that, you know, they were in the floodplain and the wetlands and he needed special permits for that.
Thank you.
Councilman Taggart?
Pass.
Councilman Cordy?
Yes, referring to the letter from the attorney for Mr. Pelletone. On page 3, there's also a discussion or a paragraph that mentions in county code a approval procedure for county council to authorize undertaking stream improvement projects. Could you offer any comment on that particular county code section and its relevance or not being relevant to the actions we're being proposed to take by this resolution?
Marianne Dougherty, Special Services. I would say that's not applicable because this is in a project that the county is doing on its own. It's not its own construction drainage project. They're a local sponsor of the Forest Project. And as a sponsorship, we are required to get the easements necessary. But it's not a drainage project that the county undertook on its own, which then those provisions would be applicable. Although it's interesting to note, I have looked at it, and many of those provisions were actually completed in this project. They had lots of public meetings on it and other things. Plans were obviously drawn up. But that wouldn't be applicable to this.
Thank you.
Councilman Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Councilwoman Kilpatrick. The last time you guys were here at the committee meeting in September, I had similar concerns because it appeared to me that we were asking Mr. Pelletone to do something before you had actually gotten the permits from all of the permission from all of the other landowners. That's not the case today. I'm just very sensitive when we're talking about doing condemnation, no matter where it may occur. But at this time, I think it's very interesting that the code itself, the state code, mentions Little Mill Creek as an example of why the legislation was necessary. I want to thank you, Marianne, because some of the concerns or questions I saw in the letter from council, I actually looked up the word alter myself because I saw you guys had different views of what it meant, and I would agree with you. But furthermore, I think that it seems to me that Mr. Pelletone, as much as I sympathize with him, is asking us for something that we don't have. We don't have the permits. And he bought the property assuming that it wasn't in the wetland. And that has happened in Newcastle County before. I can recall someone purchasing the property, wanted to build a church, and you needed to collect the road because that's what the code says, and they didn't realize that. So after the fact, the code is still the code. It just seems to me that, in my opinion, you have negotiated in fairness, but in your negotiations, if he's still demanding permits that we can't provide, I don't know where you take the conversation from there because he's asking for something, again, that we don't have. As challenging as it is to do condemnation, all of the other landowners have agreed, 38 out of 39, except this one. And if I understood Tony correctly, it's only 3% of his land that we would be using for the good of the community. I don't think that this is a catch-all for all the problems we have, but I certainly think it's an improvement. And the fact that the federal government is putting as much money into the process as they are, I just don't think we can afford to lose that. So whatever percentage of improvement it is still an improvement.
Council President Bullock.
Would you consider this a short-term solution to a long-term problem? How would you classify it?
I would consider this, Attorney Scial, Special Services, I would consider this a long-term solution because we are improving the drainage capability of the section of channel in a watershed that's pretty much urbanized as much as it can be.
You can see over the years, since 52, there's been improvements done by the county. But there was building going on. I think you're right here. How much more can you expand from what it is? The other question, and I know it's really to Mr. Pelletone, and knowing through the tax ditches, whenever we've had to disturb, we have to apply to the Army Corps of Engineers for a permit. Has that ever been done? Because anything that's in that area, that's who controls it. And that's not the county and not the state. It would still be under the jurisdiction of the Army Corps. So that, to Councilman Cartier, we're really, until he gets approval from them, nothing can be moved forward. but I just, you know, looking, and I didn't know it was 1952 when they did whatever they did, probably corrected it, and then they went and built more. Then more was built on it, and then it backs up. It answers your what was just said to you.
Right, yeah.
Is you just keep creating a problem, but you know, I don't know what his elevation, if it does drop it a foot, you know, how much more is out of the floodplain or not. But anything in wetlands, just knowing what I've been through along with, I think you still got to get up with the Army Corps. It has nothing to do with the county. Is there any other questions? Any from the public? Yes, that's who you are.
I'm Don Pellicone. I'm the owner of the properties. We met last council meeting. I was surprised to hear a lot of the questions that you all were asking, were the same questions that I've been asking for four years since 2008, 5 years now. To set the record straight, give you a little bit of history of what happened with this property. Before I purchased this property, I went to DENREC. I went to land use. And through the Freedom of Information Act, I asked for information for problems on this property, have in writing from them that there were no problems. No soil problems, no water problems. I met with the county agent, Newcastle County Land Use, through Freedom of Information Act, asked them the same thing, no problems. The floodplain is the problem. 2008, when I moved into my property, I started, it was a garbage dump 20 feet high from the street. And what I did was take out all the hazardous waste, 5 truckloads of tires, building, demolition, you name it, was all dumped in there for countless years. The floodplain encompasses the whole entire industrial park, whether it's developed, undeveloped, whatever, even the street is in the floodplain. What I'm asking for here, originally in 2008, with the first public meeting that was held in Newport, I believe Mr. Retta was chair at that meeting. My name is on the list for being there at that meeting. And I went to Army Corps of Engineers, and I went to DENREC, and I told them, you're in the floodplain, you are working in the floodplain, the same permits and requirements that are on me are on you also. You have to be able to permit out of it before you can disturb the floodplain whatsoever. In talking with them, Kevin Donnelly and I walked the property several times, and we discussed possibilities of my interaction with the project. I have been offering since 2008 the use of my property for staging, for easy access for this project. Also, I've offered the county at one of our last meetings to be able to dump the spoils, the 30,000 cubic yards of stuff that you're going to take out of this creek onto my property. So you won't have to pay landfill fees. You won't have to take 1,500 truckloads fill out of this property. You could leave it there on the site. You're going to have to permit out of it to do that, which you're going to have to do as a requirement for the project anyhow. You cannot disturb the floodplain. You have to go to land use first to get a variance. You have to go to FEMA. After, in September of 2008, John Geisling came out to me, he's an engineer with land use, and told me I was going to have to bring all this material that I hauled away back. He said, it's in the floodplain, you're not allowed to disturb it, you have to bring it back and pile it up. I told him I wouldn't do it, and I didn't do it. I permitted out of it. I went to FEMA, I went to Army Corps of Engineers, I went to DENREC, I went to land use, I got an approval, we had a show cause hearing, and I permitted out of it. I would like to move forward on my property. This project is going to require permits for them to do the work, which I asked them in 2008 to be part of the project. You're working on my property. We can work together with this. I'm not the one dragging my feet here. I'm just wanting and looking for what's fair and what makes sense. The whole industrial park is developed except for my parcels, and I have three of them. It's 2 acres of ground. It's going to have to be filled. There are wetlands issues, which someone mentioned that I had a violation of the wetlands. Our last meeting, my last meeting, with Newcastle County and with Army Corps of Engineers, Army Corps of Engineers, Mr. Mulfany, who was here, admitted that those wetlands violations, the fill had already been there, had always been there. I didn't put it there. I've been saying that since 2008. But you required me to dig it out, and I dug it out. 2,000 square feet, 13 feet deep. Excavators cost were $20,000 just to dig it out, let alone after John Geisling showed me this floodplain map, and I said to him in 2008, John, where did you get this map? Oh, it's there if you know where to look. Guess what? My title insurance people couldn't find it. Byer Marin, who was the lawyer that was responsible for the closing, couldn't find it with his title search. I got deeds that were free and clear. You're telling me I can't use my property because it's in the floodplain. I understand the restrictions. What I finally asked Newcastle County to do was to go to bat for me. Army Corps of Engineers, DENREC, write letters of approval. You're okay with me moving forward with my property for your easements. First, initially, I wanted the permits too, because you get the permits just given to me at the same time, make me part of the project. That didn't happen. Come to find out, from Army Corps of Engineers, I think Doug Souter, who was here, told me on a phone conversation, they don't want me to develop my property. They want to be able to flood it because guess what? This project doesn't solve the problem. It may lower the flood, the water height on that car that's underwater by a foot and a half or 2 feet, it's still underwater. The water cannot go under the railroad trestle that's Amtrak Conrail, which has to drain all of this water. It makes a right-hand turn at the end of my property and has to go under this trestle to drain the water. It can't do it. Can't do it now. If you make more water, it can't do it later either. So what you're trying to do is keep my property empty so that you can flood it for all this extra excess water that's coming out of these storms. Irene was horrendous. We had 3 feet of water in Germain, on Germain Drive. It was like you drove in there and it was a river. You just looked and you saw nothing but water. This project is not going to solve that problem. It may reduce it by a little bit, but if you have a foot of water in Germain Drive as opposed to 3 feet, is that any better? Does it make sense to spend $5 million? I don't think it does. You know, the wetlands issues, the floodplain issues, I spoke with three different code people from Army Corps of Engineers. Todd Hinderman, Ed Bonner, Jeanette Baker. They all offer to me, Todd Hinderman and Ed Bonner, the last two people that have the wetlands issues that are on my property can be banked out. And I ask the county and the state and the federal government to bank those wetlands issues off of my property so that I no longer have wetlands issues. That disappears. That sounds like it's pretty simple to me to do that. Common sense. The fact of the matter is it started with land use. Freedom of Information Act, when I did a parcel search on this property, there should have been a big red X on the front page. Do not disturb its floodplain. Or if these issues with this wetlands violation that was already there before I purchased my property, violation, that should have been a lien against the property. The previous owner should have made that good. What happened there? Oh, I inherited, so it was up to me to dig it out, which I did. And I've been saying, Kevin Donnelly will verify this, for 4 years, since 2008, I didn't put this fill here. I had a neighbor that called up and said I was filling the wetlands because he was pissed that he couldn't get to do what I did, because he's got one remaining lot, and he's been wanting to develop his lot, and he can't develop it. The issue for floodplain and wetlands was not disclosed when I bought the property. John Geisling said, it's there if you know where to look. How come my experts couldn't find it? Bob, Councilman Weiner asked that question at our last meeting. How could all these experts have missed this? I've been negotiating with the county in good faith. I'd like to see this project go forward. I can save the county $750,000 by filling my property. We need to get these permits. Go to bat for me. Just say, look, we'll write letters to FEMA. We'll write letters to Army Corps. We're all in agreement. We're okay with you filling your property. I want to fill it up to the street so that I can develop it and use it. I have concept plans. I brought the plans with me in case you need to take a look at them. You know, this doesn't need to, we don't need to waste any more time and any more money with this. This is pretty simple. You need to have something from me, and I need to have something from you. Let's keep this door open. Let's keep the conversation going. I'm not asking you for $1 million. All I'm asking for is your letters of recommendation to allow me to move forward, to bank out of the wetlands, and to permit out of the floodplain, because I can't permit out of it. I've already done it. Because the material that I moved and hauled out of there, what was left was still in the floodplain. So in order for me to use it, I had to permit out of it, and I did that. So why can't we move forward and keep this conversation going? You want to take my property? That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So you're going to come back to me after court, and you're going to say, okay, Don, let's negotiate. Put yourself in my place. Am I going to be wanting to negotiate with anybody at that time? I spent a fortune here, a fortune. This should have never happened with this floodplain issue, with land use should have never happened. When I asked for this information, that are there any problems, I have it in writing. They said no. No means no. No wetlands issues, no floodplain issues. That came from DENRAC. Land use, no issues. What am I supposed to think? I think this is wrong. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it makes any sense. You're going to spend $5 million. You're not going to solve the problem. And the storms are getting worse. We lucked out with Sandy. Irene, it was 3 feet of water in my side of the street. All the property owners down that my side of Germain Drive were flooded. Part of another problem is the storm drain that drains the cul-de-sac is at ground level. They dug a hole through the creek bed to get rid of the water from rain. Well, when the creek's up above the high tide or whatever, the pipe can't drain. So how are you going to drain the water from the street through this cul-de-sac in this stormwater drain? There's no place for it to go. I've talked to DelDOT for 4 years now to get them to fix the pipe. I went to land use to get them to fix the drainage pipe. It's supposed to be on the easement. It's not on the easement. It's 30 feet from it. And every time it rains, it floods my property. And Army Corps of Engineers, everybody says, well, we see wet soil, therefore there's wet lands. Well, it's artificial. Do a delineation. Ask them to do that. Refused. Just told them to draw a line in the sand. Where are my encroachments? We're not going to do that. We refuse to do that. So what am I supposed to do? I have a plan to develop this property. My plan could hire 40 people. Aren't we infinitely better off as a community, as a state, rather than a community as on Germain Drive, better off if I develop my property? People paying taxes. Me paying taxes. More taxes. Everyone else in that industrial park are developed. UDC came into effect in 97 and stopped the floodplain. I'm going to fill it out of the floodplain, so that's not going to be an issue for me. I have people every day coming to me and saying, gee, I want to dump a truckload of fill in here. I can't do it. Not going to do it. I already learned that lesson the hard way. $150,000 worth. Engineers and lawyers since 2008. Three engineering companies. And had Laura Herr from DENRAC, manager from DENRAC, say to me, well, you did your due diligence, but you didn't do it well enough. What does that mean? What does that mean? You did your due diligence, but you didn't do it well enough. I came to you for the information on this property, and I received information on this in writing. Oh, you know what? If Rich Abbott was there, it would have been a different story. I was there with one of my engineers. This doesn't have to go any farther. I'm willing to cooperate. I want this project to go through. I'd like to see this project fixed. You can't fix it because you can't put another pipe under the railroad trestle. They know that. Army Corps of Engineers knows that. Land use knows that. Tony Schiavi knows that. Doesn't fix the problem. It's a band-aid. The whole industrial park is in the floodplain, not just my property. The Amtrak trestle is in the floodplain. Right. I'm willing to get the permits. I've done it before to use what I have, what I'm using now. I'm willing to move forward with that. But I want some cooperation. And if you're not willing to cooperate with me, well then, you know, you're just spinning your wheels. We're spinning our wheels. We're not moving forward. We're just going backwards.
All right. Thank you. Councilman Redding.
Thank you. A couple things. Mr. Pelican, you bought the property in '08?
Yes.
Maybe somebody from Special Services, which I know the answer, but I'd just like to hear from them, or Doug Suter. How long has this project been in the works?
Doug Suter, Three Brookside Drive. Project's been in the works since 1990.
Okay, thank you. And you stated a couple times that there was 3 feet of water with different hurricanes, Hurricane Irene and I believe in 79 or 89. I live uphill from where your property is. I live in Ellesmere. I had 3 feet of water in front of my house in 79. And with a sump pump, I maintained 30 inches in my basement.
Is there any other questions from council? Councilman Street?
I'd like to know if between now and the next regular council meeting, if we can somehow verify, not verify, what the gentleman is saying in regard to what he was informed of or not informed of from DNREC and land use.
I was going to say, it sounds like DNREC's the one that told him there wasn't any problems. So.
That's a lot. Attorney Schiavi, Special Services. I'd just like to follow up on one of the points that Mr. Pelican made. This slide here is one that we haven't showed you. I think it's probably an appropriate time to do so. This is the modeling results from you saw one that looked just like that, but it's a little bit different. You saw the modeling results from the midpoint of the project. This is the modeling results that occur in the stream right alongside 80, 82, and 84 Germain Drive. And in the two-year storm, when you compare the pre-construction conditions to the post-construction conditions, the post-construction conditions result in a half a foot drop at the two-year storm. The flows are small. The Amtrak culvert can handle those flows. And even though more water is getting down there, we're deepening the channel. So the net impact on that property is positive in that the flood level is going to drop down a half a foot in the two-year event. And that's a storm that has a 50% chance of occurring in a given year. The 10-year storm, you have a 3.8-foot drop. Now that's a considerable benefit. And that's every time you have a storm that has a probability of occurring 10% in a given year, you get a big benefit on that property. Instead of flooding, floodwaters being almost 4 feet as high as the precondition, you're going to be better off. Now, the 100-year storm, he is correct. The Amtrak culvert is only designed, it's immediately downstream from those properties, and it's only designed to carry a certain amount of flows. So when you get up to that 100-year storm, no matter what we do, you're only going to see a little bit of a benefit. The key is we're not making things worse there. We're helping them slow down. So I just wanted to clear that up. We do have modeling data. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
I just have a question. And maybe you or the only court can answer. Why can you not, at the Amtrak, put another culvert under a railroad track? I mean, we did it with a tax ditch with a railroad. Put one where there never was one. I mean, if they can't be any different than anybody else.
Brian Levenet from the Corps of Engineers. That was the proposed plan in the initial study back in reconnaissance phase of the project, but it was never proceeded beyond that point just because of the dealings with the railroad and the restrictions. The one issue you face there is that you just can't, you not only have the railroad embankment, you also have the 95 embankment. So you have to jack the pipes through the railroad embankment, then you have to put in a new channel that turns it back in, so it crosses the 95 bridge over too. So you're just talking a very expensive option.
I mean, I know we have ditches, we'll just say in a 100-year flood. I think the same year, September of that flood, I had three rains that week that filled my ditches to the top, which were 100-year floods. So they happened within 3 weeks of each other. There were three of them. I mean, to be a culvert pipe to be at a 100-year flood, especially today, and then you got levels at 500, it sounds like somebody needs, I mean, I don't, who owns that railroad line? Is it still Conrail or?
So railroads are the railroad.
You don't know which railroad owns it, because.
I think the trustees for Pennsylvania Railroad.
Which is it's still in Conrail. They still own a lot of properties. Just knowing they even own properties around me that are theirs, at crossings and stuff. Not, this isn't Pennsylvania Railroad, it's the, when they merge, they're still a Conrail loan.
And two side culverts would solve the problem?
Yeah.
Or they would definitely alleviate the problem, bring in large areas out of the floodplain?
I mean, I'm still thinking we probably still need to do this work, but I still think in the long run, somebody better look at putting a pipe through that culvert, through the railroad, and to, you know, if it's the same thing, condemn it to go through them.
Yeah, it would.
Good luck on that.
I mean, what's the, you know,
it would.
Yeah, we've already dealt with that once. Tim's problem now.
I abstain. Now you abstain.
I understand. And, I mean, what is, it's just like, what is the agreement with the railroad coming through with the original agreement? Because the St. George's Bridge was built because of the original agreement for the canal that the Army Corps would have to build the bridge and pay for it, which they fought like hard as heck to not do it. But it's still a bureaucracy through this railroad that they should, even though things have changed over the years, when they built it, it was all farms upstream. Now we have a lot of impervious surface that we have a lot more. Anyone else would have to control what they're doing.
Right. And also, there is a major communication line running alongside that railroad that will shut the country down if you disturb it. So you've got to go through that permit process.
You know, the railroad probably got paid to do that, to run that line. I'm just saying. Yes.
I don't know if you're aware, but Del Dodd is in the process of building a project for Delaware Drainage to improve that rail line in 5 years. And I mean, that project is not impacting the bridge other than the sector.
And this is a question to you. Last time, I think you did show some of the elevations of what the silt was. And there was quite a bit of silt in that culvert under the railroad. But it isn't looking to clean that out, is it? I mean, this project will not clean that out.
Yeah, our project won't. The Delta project.
With that lower, because I mean, there was almost 3 to 4 foot of silt under there.
Somebody do something.
Earlier versions of the Illinois 6 feet also included the channel dredging across the dam has to be progress.
I know there's a problem, you know, whatever can help, but, you know, I think still we somehow have to be able to make sure you get it away from that point. Yes.
Mayor, and General Manager, Special Services, just to try to wrap this up, so that we're kind of
running
over.
Yeah, a little bit. A
couple things. I don't know what discussions have taken place with the railroad development of this project. I just know in the few times I've attempted to deal with railroads, you think government is slow generally, it puts it into the next millennium. That's just getting a hold of the right person before they tell you why they can't do something. So just Glenville is a perfect example of what happens trying to deal with the railroads, and we end up buying it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first one. Second, to prolong this project, we were in jeopardy of losing the funds at the end of the last fiscal year. In light of all the things the federal government's going through, I am confident this isn't going to make it through another fiscal year.
We're done.
Third, to Councilman Street's question.
We're done.
Reference to Mr. Pelican. Do you have any of those statements you made in writing from any of the agencies?
I do.
Okay, good. Then we can try to gather some information from Mr. Street's request.
And that was before I bought my property also.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
That's probably it.
But I just want to see the project go forward.
And just to sum it up, if Mr. Pelican had been wrong by any other agencies, we've tried to work with him on this one. And I hate to use that old adage, you know, two wrongs ain't going to make right. You know, if we can drop the flood plain anywhere along that, we're going to make somebody's life better in some future storm.
Councilman Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief because I don't like picking fights I know I'm going to lose. By the same token, what I just heard is all too compelling. And when I look across the board at what I think is a holistic picture, it's all too compelling. And that being, we don't have the wherewithal or the desire to take on the railroad. But on the other hand, it's real easy for land use, special services, the Army Corps, whoever else is involved, I'm missing one. We can all unite against the property owner and his council, and that's fair. I'm not so sure I agree with that. And the question I ask, I believe is a meritorious question, is because if in fact he was informed by two government sources that what is now known to be a problem was not a problem, I think that's a major problem for somebody.
Mr.
Chairman.
Thank
you, Councilor Krause.
Again, my name is Doug Suter. I am 3 Brookside Drive. Tony, would you mind putting that one picture up so you all can get an idea of what I face? That's my property. That's what I endure. Take a hard look, please.
Did you get a permit for that pool?
Yes. It's probably cost me a little over $1 million. That's July 5th, 1989. That and Irene were the two worst floods. That's about 5. Actually, the water went up higher than that. The cars were totally underwater. Okay. It's about 5.5 to 6 feet of water in my property. Outside of Irene and Floyd, I've been flooded 31 other times. It's a total of 33 floods. Most of the floods range 18 to 24 inches. Tony put up a slide that showed this work would reduce the flooding by 3.7 feet. Well, I passed first grade math. It means I won't have flooding 31 out of 33 times. Good point, isn't it? I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. I would like for the record to state that statement Mr. Pelican made about, I told him they, whoever they is, don't want him to build the property, I emphatically deny making that statement. I'm saying that as an officer of the court. I'm to be federal arbitrator. Also, the fact that the whole industrial park is in the floodplain, Mr. Mulvaney pulled up the floodplain maps. Not true. If you care to look after the meeting, I'm sure he'll be willing to pull it up. I had about 4 pages that I was going to read to you. I don't need to get into it. I think it's pretty well been covered. We've got a problem here. We need to fix it. Councilman Sheldon, you asked, commented about the car in that 1989 flood. That, again, was one of the worst floods. With an average flood of only 2 feet, wouldn't happen. Councilman Street, you said, what guarantee do we have that this will stop the flooding? We don't have a guarantee. There's no guarantees in life, so. What we do know is we're going to increase that pot from 2 quarts to 4 quarts. Which means most of the water will stay in the creek.
and not in our streets and not in our businesses. This has cost a lot of people time, money, personal injury. I'm one of them. This has cost the state of Delaware, the federal government money, because businesses have gone out. They haven't paid taxes. We'd have no employment. It adds to the problem. This goes just beyond watering somebody's building. This is costing us all. We've got to fix it. And as Mr. Merritt said, with a high level of confidence, if we don't get off the pot and get it done, it's never going to get done. The money's gone. I don't know how many more of these major floods I can take. I have flood insurance. It cost me an arm and a leg. But it still doesn't cover all the losses. We've got to get this done. In closing, I'd like to remind everybody, I don't know how many are Star Trek fans, but there's a scene where Spock has to go into a nuclear reactor and give up his life to repair that reactor to save the ship and all the lives on board. When asked, he said, "I did it for one simple reason. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one." That's what this boils down to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? How long have you been?
Council President.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. How long have you been at this location?
Since 1981.
Has been a problem since then?
Since 1989. July 5th, 89 was the first flood. And through that first 8 years, never had a drop of water in the shower.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any more from the public? Okay, is there anything else? Public comment in general? Is there a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Not voting. I want to say. What's going on? Can't make up my mind.